July 10, 1981, Skidmore, Missouri. A man climbs into the cab of his pickup truck after leaving the D&G Tavern. He starts the truck and pauses to light a cigarette when shots ring out behind and in front of him, shattering glass and killing the man inside. 45 people witnessed the shooting, but when it was over, nobody called 911. After picking up the shell casings, the people of this small farming community went on about their business. The dead man inside the truck had robbed, raped, burned, and shot the townspeople of Skidmore without ever paying the price. So they took their own pound of flesh and never spoke of it again. This is the mysterious murder of Ken Rex McElroy. It happened in plain sight. Hey, y'all, I'm Chris Calvert.
And I'm her husband, Rob Potter. Welcome to Hitch to Homicide.
For better or worse.
Till death do us part.
Everybody.
Yes, welcome, welcome, welcome. And for our friends in Quebec, Canada.
Go Canada.
Yes.
Oh, Canada. Maybe that's what I should say.
Yes. Bienvenue, bienvenue, bienvenue.
We have lots of listeners in Canada.
Yeah, we do.
Well, wherever you're listening, be sure to rate and review the podcast. You can subscribe wherever you're listening. And if you're watching on YouTube, hit that subscribe button below.
Yep.
You can find us on Instagram at Hitch to Homicide. Or on X at H2H_podcast. And if you want true crime with us all the time, please join our closed Facebook group, The In-Laws and Outlaws. Go to Facebook and type in H2H In-Laws and Outlaws, answer a few questions, and you're in. So go join.
Yes.
It's a good crew of true crime-loving folks. And I also post photos and other information in there as well.
It's a lot of fun.
And last week, I posted the dirty letters that yeah. our two killers sent to each other in jail.
Yes.
All 24 pages of them.
Yeah. You get the news all day.
You get it. You get all the good stuff.
Yeah.
We're getting case suggestions and true crime listener stories. Keep them coming. We appreciate everybody who listens each week. So thank you guys. And we love it when you take time to drop us a note.
Yep.
Now, Rob, you know I love doing a true crime where the bad guy has two first names.
Billy Bob.
Ken Rex.
Yep.
It's the only vigilante case I have ever done.
Okay.
Before we get started, let me thank some sources. BuzzFeed, the Sundance Channel's series No One Saw a Thing, Patch.com, Wikipedia, The New York Times, Nottoway County, Missouri.com, The Kansas City Star, and In Broad Daylight by Harry McLean. It's a great book. It did win the Edgar Award for True Crime Writing. If you like this story, I highly recommend it. I will have a link to the book and all the other sources in the show notes.
All right. Well, you ready?
I am.
Let's do it.
Kenneth Rex McElroy was born on June 1st, 1934, to Tony and Mabel Lister McElroy. He's number 13 of 15 children.
Good Lord.
Not a whole lot to do, apparently, where his parents were.
Wow.
His parents are poor migrant tenant farmers who moved between Kansas and the Ozarks before they finally settled down right outside the town of Skidmore, Missouri. Population 400, give or take a cousin.
Okay, I have a question.
Already?
Where would the name Skidmore come from?
I'm about to tell you.
Oh, okay. It's the first thing that came into my mind.
Gosh.
It's yeah. a guy thing.
Clearly a guy thing. I'm rolling my eyes right now. I haven't even made it through how big the town is where he grows up. So there are 400 people in town when he's growing up there.
Hmm.
And today's population is just over 200.
Oh, wow.
The little town of Skidmore was first settled in 1840 by a man named William Bunton. The town was platted in 1889 when Marine Skidmore, officially founded the town
right.
and donated 20 acres to the Nottoway Valley Railroad Company.
All right.
In fact, Skidmore is located in Nottoway County, and a grist mill went up and a railroad went through the town. It was a small town where people did not lock their doors at night. Rob grew up in one of these towns.
Yep.
I used to live in one of these towns.
Yep, absolutely.
And it's not where we live now.
No.
Because we lock our doors.
Yep. And we live in a nice section, but we still lock our doors.
I think small town people lock their doors now.
Yeah.
It's a different world.
It really is.
Ken Rex's family was part of the farming community in the area. They weren't from Missouri. They were from Kansas. And Ken Rex resented the people he considered to be more successful than his own family. He's a little jealous.
Okay.
As a little boy, Ken Rex loved animals, but his father beat that out of him.
Wow.
There's a story where Ken Rex refused to abuse an animal after his dad directed him to do so. So his dad kept punishing him until he did.
Hmm.
Ken Rex is a bully from a young age. Perhaps he learned this from his dad.
I was going to say, where did that come from?
Yeah. While at school, and by the time he's in fourth or fifth grade, Ken Rex would bully the other kids whose families were parts of these big, successful farming operations. And by 1948, when he's around 14, he starts stealing.
Mm.
He's shoplifting from stores. He's taking lunch money.
Wow.
In his book, In Broad Daylight, McLean describes Ken Rex as an illiterate bully that both kids and adults were afraid of.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow. And how old was he at this time?
14.
Jeez.
I already told you, he's notorious for stealing lunch money from other kids. He would shoplift, and no one would say anything because they were too afraid of Ken Rex.
Wow.
When Ken Rex is 15, he drops out of school. It's an eighth grade dropout. In 1952, when Ken Rex is 18 years old, he marries his first wife, Alita. She is 16. Now, by this time, Ken Rex is a grown man. He's 6'3", 270 pounds.
Wow.
With jet black hair, long sideburns. He's got the chops going on.
Mm-hmm.
And he had blue eyes that, quote, stared right through you, end
wow.
quote. Ken Rex and Alita moved to Colorado. Ken was going to work for one of his sister's husbands in construction. And while he's working at a construction site, a steel slab fell on him. But there's also a source that said he had a head injury from falling off a hay wagon. Maybe one, maybe the other, maybe both.
Yeah.
But apparently now he's not just a bully, but a bully who suffers from chronic pain.
Well, there's a combo.
Yeah. So he's just mean.
Yeah.
And he feels bad.
Sure.
By 1955-56, Ken Rex and Alita move back to Missouri after this accident, and they settle in Skidmore. By 1958, Ken Rex meets and becomes involved with, while he's married, a 15-year-old girl named Sharon.
Whoa.
So he's got a wife and a teenage girlfriend.
Wow.
Something that's going to happen more than once.
Wow.
But when he and Sharon get into an argument, he actually shoots her.
What?
It's non-life-threatening, but he shoots her.
Gee whiz.
And it's then that he divorces Alita and marries Sharon to get out of the assault charge.
Okay. Wow.
Ken Rex was married a lot, at least four times, at least four wives, and he fathered somewhere between 15 and 19 children.
Ken was busy.
Yeah.
Wow.
What we do know is that Ken Rex liked underage girls. So if you didn't like him for being a thief and a bully, I'm going to give you several more underage reasons to dislike this man.
Yeah.
Ken Rex was a bully in the greatest sense because he liked to pick on women and people who were easy targets. The weak impala of the herd. That's what we always say.
Yep.
And apparently there were really no stories about Ken Rex getting into a fight because he always had a gun with him.
Mm.
So if there was going to be a fight, there was going to be a shooting.
Yeah.
And one local farmer said, quote, I think Ken Rex simply wanted to be big and important and have people afraid of him when he walked down the street. And he got that. They were, end quote.
Yeah. Well, it was something he learned as a child and it just went into his adulthood.
Well, now he's packing heat, too.
Yeah.
Ken Rex leases farmland near his family's place. Now he's going to be a farmer.
Okay.
But aside from farming, Ken Rex was also into theft. He liked to steal livestock from other farmers. He stole cattle, pigs, gasoline, grain, alcohol, and even antiques.
Did you leave anything off the list?
No.
She was.
He steals the virginity of several young girls, too.
Yeah, he has that covered, too. Okay.
Ken Rex is always in trouble with the long arm of the law, although this law enforcement agency has T-Rex arms. That's my joke for the day.
That's funny. That's good.
Well, you know, Ken Rex, T-Rex.
Yeah. K-Rex.
K-Rex is charged with a crime on average 3 times a year.
Wow.
And when it's all said and done, he will be indicted 21 times.
Man.
Want to know how many times he's convicted?
I'm going to say zero.
One.
One? Wow.
Hold that thought.
Okay.
So Ken Rex's second wife, Sharon, is 15 when they meet. And by best estimates, he's then 20. He will regularly beat Sharon, but they did have 2 children. But by the time his second child with Sharon is born in 1960, he has a girlfriend, Sally, who is 13.
Oh, gee whiz.
Ken Rex is 27 at this point.
Oh, man.
He moves Sally in with him and Sharon and the 2 babies. Sally will have 3 children with Ken Rex. And in 1964, Ken Rex kicks Sally out of his house.
Okay, I got a question for you. I mean, there's statutory rape laws.
Yes, but yeah.
Didn't it?
Apparently not. She's not pressing charges. She's 13 having his babies and not pressing charges. Not to mention the fact she's living with him and his wife, who he beats.
This is so messed up.
It doesn't take long for Ken Rex to be bored with Sharon and Sally and all his children, so he found another girl, another underage girl, because also in 1964, he meets Alice Wood. Ken leaves Sharon to move in with Alice. Alice is widely known as Ken Rex's 3rd wife. He abused Alice verbally and physically, and when she gave birth to their son, Alice moved out to live with her mother and stepfather in St. Joseph, which is a little town just over from Skidmore.
Okay.
Now, Ken Rex is furious that Alice left and took with her his son, so he calls Alice's parents' place and started threatening not just Alice, but the whole family. Ken Rex said he was coming to pick up his son, and if anyone tried to stop him, he would kill him.
Good Lord.
To which Alice's stepfather told Ken Rex to kiss my ass.
Good for him.
So on April 10th, 1972, Ken Rex drove to the house and shot Alice's stepfather in the leg through his living room window.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Gee whiz.
Ken Rex is arrested on assault charges, but Alice's stepfather would need to testify to make the charges stick. And in order to keep him from testifying, Ken Rex began threatening and bullying the family. He told the stepfather he'd shot that he would kill his entire family if he testified against him.
Jeez.
Ken Rex would follow Alice's stepfather around town and inside his home. He would sit outside in his truck for hours, just watching the family through the window. Then one night after these two have a verbal altercation at a bar, Ken Rex threatened Alice's stepfather and put a shotgun in his face.
Yeah.
Alice's stepfather dropped the assault charges the very next day.
Yeah, I guess I would, too. If I had a maniac pointing a shotgun into my face. Yeah.
I mean, this isn't the 1800s. This is 1970 into 1980. Wow. But it seems like it's the Wild West in Missouri.
Well, I was just thinking that exact same thing when you were talking earlier. I'm like, what year is this?
Yeah. But even after all of that, Alice moved back in with Ken Rex and she took her baby boy with her. And as a welcome home present to Alice, Ken Rex brought home a new girlfriend, a 12-year-old named Trina McLeod.
Come on.
Ken Rex is now 35.
Oh, my. Yeah.
He would wait for her to get off of the school bus. He'd greet her, then like whisk her away to be with him. And according to the people of Skidmore, Trina liked that Ken Rex did this. So these two are sleeping together, a 12-year-old schoolgirl and a 35-year-old man. Okay. And that, my friends, is statutory rape.
Yeah, big time.
By the time Trina is 14, what do you think's happening?
I'm going to say she's pregnant.
She's pregnant. Yeah. Surprise, surprise. Yeah. She drops out of eighth grade and moves in with Alice and Ken Rex and all the other children. So if you're keeping score at home, that's five women, a whole mess of children, and now he's gotten a child pregnant, and he still has his wife at home.
See, and here's the other thing. I would think that the school, wherever she's going to school, they had to know she was pregnant.
Yeah. Well, she drops out when she's pregnant.
Yeah. So why wouldn't they do something?
They're not going to get involved. It's public school. It's the parents' responsibility.
I know, but geez.
Ken Rex goes to Trina's parents and says, I'm taking her. To which they were like, hell no, you're not taking her anywhere.
Yeah.
So he threatens Trina's parents over and over until they finally conceded. And Trina wants to live with Ken Rex. But Ken Rex isn't going to treat her any differently than he treated Sharon, Sally, or Alice.
Right.
So after he shows himself to Trina, and he shows that it's not all ice cream after school off the bus stop stuff,
mm-hmm.
Trina and Alice decide they're both exhausted from living in constant fear of Ken Rex. And if you watch any of the documentaries, these two women are like sister wives, taking care of each other. They turn to each other when they're afraid or they need to take shelter from him.
Sure.
And they kind of shared him like he was a polygamist too. Because he is.
Yeah.
And according to one of the townspeople, the church people didn't like it one bit.
You think?
But Ken Rex is going to do his own thing no matter what. And his kids, well, there were some that said he was an absolutely great dad.
Okay.
But they also said, yeah, he did abuse his wives. The kids could remember their moms, whichever one it might be. They remember them having black eyes.
Wow.
But they also said that they never saw their dad hit their mom. At least one of them said this.
Right.
16 days after Trina gives birth, Alice and Trina take the children and they leave the McElroy farm to live with Trina's parents. And Ken Rex wasn't having it. On June 12, 1973, he went to Trina's parents' place where he viciously beat Trina and Alice both. And then he burned Trina's parents' home to the ground.
Whoa.
And shot their family dog.
Yeah. See, now you've crossed the line.
It's over now. He's yeah. shot a dog.
Yeah.
He forced Alice and Trina into his truck with all the kids, and he drove them all straight back to the farmhouse. Hmm. Now, Trina's just a few weeks postpartum, and Ken Rex had beaten her so badly that she had to go to the hospital.
Wow.
And the doctor who treated her was horrified, and because she's a minor, she's 14, he calls child services.
Well, thank God somebody did.
Yep. Jeez. And Trina was put into foster care in Maryville, Missouri with her new little baby boy.
Okay.
It's June of 1973, and Ken Rex is charged with arson, assault, statutory rape, and brandishing a deadly weapon for his actions at Trina's parents' place, the McLeods.
Hmm.
Enter Richard Gene McFadden, an attorney from Kansas City who may or may not have had ties to the mafia.
Hmm.
What he was, according to many of the townspeople of Skidmore, was a, quote, nickel slick lawyer, end quote.
I haven't heard that one.
He's a man who would work for cash without care or conscience. Ken Rex is arrested, booked, arraigned, and released on $2,500 bail. Now, there's an interview with McFadden who says the first time he met Ken Rex, he told him, I'm probably a little bit too expensive for you, Ken Rex.
Hmm.
And Ken Rex pulled out a roll of money and started laying down $100 bills on his desk.
Where'd he get those?
And he officially retained himself an attorney. I don't know.
Wow.
I don't know. Maybe he was playing, you know, strong guy for somebody else,
yeah.
and he's getting paid in cash.
Well, and you also said that he was stealing cattle and...
Well, yeah, he was stealing cattle and pigs, and so then he would go sell them, I'm sure.
Yeah. Days before eBay.
I don't think you can sell a pig on eBay these days.
Oh, I'm sure there's a pig on there somewhere.
See, now I'm going to have to go look and see. Meanwhile, at the foster home, Ken Rex would sit in his pickup truck outside the foster parents' house for hours at a time, just staring. And this foster family had a daughter of their own. And Ken Rex told the foster parents that he would trade, quote, girl for girl to get Trina and his son back, saying, I know where your daughter goes to school. I know her bus number.
Wow.
So the Foster family files even more charges against Kenrex.
Wow.
But then Richard McFadden, old nickel slick, he managed to delay the legal process for so long, Trina, who's this naive kid, gets bored with her foster parents and runs away. She goes right back to Kenrex.
What does this guy have on these girls?
Yeah. Kenrex then divorces Alice. And on October 20th, 1974, he marries Trina so that she can't be compelled to testify against him for assault, arson, and rape.
This guy should be a lawyer instead of a criminal. Jeez, he knows all the ins and outs.
He's a strong arm.
Yeah.
Trina dropped the rape charges, but according to one of Alice's grown children, Trina told Kenrex if he didn't leave Alice and marry her and become devoted only to her, she would have the rape charges brought against him.
Hmm.
So she's sort of flipping the script on him a little
bit.
Sure. Yeah, she does get her way, and he does divorce Alice, but he's still going to beat Trina and cheat on her. 2 years later, on July 27th, 1976, Romaine Henry is working on his farm in Nottoway County. One of his sons comes to tell his dad that somebody's shooting on their property. So Romaine hops in his truck and drives the gravel road to the area where he's been told the gunfire's coming from, and he happens upon none other than...
Big Ken.
Kenrex.
Yep.
Who's in his pickup truck. Both of these men get out of their vehicles, and Romaine says something to the effect of, yo, dude, stop shooting on my property.
Yeah.
Or maybe get the hell off my property.
Right.
When Romaine confronts him, Kenrex calls him a dirty son of a bitch and accuses him of being at his place, his property, in a white Pontiac. And Romaine says, I don't even have a white Pontiac. So Kenrex then calls him a lion son of a bitch, racks his shotgun, and shoots Romaine point blank in the stomach.
Oh my gosh.
Romaine Henry is in the middle of nowhere on his farm, and Kenrex drives away. And when Romaine's family finds him, they take him to the hospital. He does recover after surgery and lots of care. Kenrex is charged with assault with the intent to kill. But Kenrex denies that he was ever on Romaine Henry's property that day. He said he wasn't on the scene at all. Now, this case drags out without a court date, thanks in part to Richard McFadden, the attorney.
Right.
In the meantime, Kenrex is up to his old intimidation game. He would park outside of Romaine Henry's house and just wait. He did this an estimated 100 times.
He was.
When the case finally went to trial, two coon hunters, mm-hmm. testified that they were with Kenrex on the day that Romaine was shot in the stomach. And there are no other witnesses to the shooting, so it's Romaine's word against Kenrex. Mm. And these two hunters are testifying that they were hunting miles away from Romaine Henry's property.
What did Ken offer those guys?
Money.
Yeah.
He probably started laying down more $100 bills.
Yeah, of course.
Also, after they go to trial, Nickel Slick McFadden starts digging up dirt on Romaine Henry, including a 30-year-old petty crime conviction from 1946 that he had hidden from the community of Skidmore.
Ugh.
McFadden got Romaine to admit to it under oath and in court, and it made him seem like he was an unreliable guy. And if he kept that secret hidden since 1946, what else wasn't he telling the good people of Skidmore?
Right.
Kenrex was acquitted.
Jeez. Oh, man.
April 25th, 1980, it's a Friday, and two little girls, one's 14 years old and one is four, are in the local corner store, the grocery store of Skidmore, a store owned by two pillars of the community, Ernst Bo Bowenkamp and his wife, Lois.
Okay.
The clerk working that day was Evelyn Sumi. Now, I've read where the Bowenkamps were known to look the other way when someone who they knew was hungry and down on their luck. If they would take something small from the store, they'd just let it go. They mm-hmm. weren't the kind of people to call them out when they were really desperate because they didn't want to shame anybody for being hungry.
Just good people.
Good people.
Yeah.
Pillars of the community.
Yep.
But when this little four-year-old daughter of Trina and Kenrex steals some penny candy at the front of the store, the sales clerk, Evelyn, nicely calls her out on it, asking her to put it back. And after this, an argument breaks out, and the older daughter says that nothing was taken. Regardless, when these two girls get home, the little girl, the four-year-old, is crying. So Trina storms into the grocery store and wants to know who the f*** had accused her daughter of stealing.
Wow.
When Lois Bowenkamp backs up the story of her store clerk and she doesn't back down, Trina says to the both of them, quote, "You're about to meet Ken Rex McElroy," end quote. And later that day, both Trina and Ken Rex show up all lathered up over a 5-cent piece of candy. And of course, Ken Rex has a loaded gun with him. Trina, who's now 23 years old, starts yelling at the clerk, Evelyn, which drew the attention of the store's owners, Bo and Lois, who come from the back of the store. And when the yelling reaches a fever pitch, Lois tells the whole lot of them just get out of the store and never come back. The Bowenkamps filed a legal proceeding against Ken Rex after the incident in the store. And Ken Rex didn't like that so much, so he begins stalking the 70-year-old grocer, Bo, and his wife, night and day.
Wow.
He'd come by the store and sit in his truck. When is he finding time to do anything else?
Well, I was about ready to say, is he trying to even make a living, or what is he doing?
I have no idea.
He had a farm.
Intimidation seems to be his job.
Yeah.
He would come by the store and sit in his truck. He'd go to their house at night and sit and watch them inside. And this would go on from when the incident happened in April until July.
So basically, he was the equivalent of today's influencer.
Just won't go away.
Yeah, exactly.
Block, block, block.
Yeah.
July 8th, 1980, Ken Rex goes to the loading dock area in the alley behind the grocery store. He gets out of his truck. He rolls up his sleeves when he sees Bo sitting on the loading dock in a chair. Ken Rex says to Bo, quote, "Do you want a fight?" end quote. To which Bo replies, quote, "I got no reason to fight," end quote.
Wow.
In the blink of an eye, Bo is looking down a double-barrel shotgun.
Jeez.
So without provocation, Ken Rex shoots Bo in the neck.
Oh, my gosh.
And when his wife finds Bo in a pool of blood, he's bleeding severely, but he manages to gurgle out one word before blacking out: McElroy.
Wow.
So Bo Bowenkamp, even though he's shot in the neck and he's 70 years old, he's going to survive.
Mm.
Ken Rex was caught by a state trooper, a man named Richard Stratton, and arrested and charged with attempted murder. But he's released on bond.
What?
Yeah.
Why would you release somebody that attempted murder on bond?
Yeah. The next day. Yeah.
Okay.
The very next day, according to the people of Skidmore, he was at the pool hall bragging about shooting Bo. And this didn't go over well with the small town group of people who don't lock their doors and are in the front pew at the church each Sunday.
Sure.
There's right and there's wrong. And if you break the law, you need to pay for your crime. But that is not what is happening.
Wow.
When Bo Bowenkamp is released from the hospital, Ken Rex began stalking all over again. He would sit in his truck in front of the Bowenkamp house and fire his shotgun into the night air. He would pull his truck up in front of the grocery store and sit and watch. This is happening every single day.
Wow.
And these people are afraid. And according to the Bowenkamps, when they called the sheriff, he'd show up 3 days later if he showed up at all. So the county of Nottoway hires a marshal. Basically, this guy's only job is to watch Ken Rex McElroy.
What a gig.
His name is Dave Dunbar. And when Ken Rex finds this out, he starts threatening not just the new marshal, Dave, but Dave's children. And when Ken Rex point blank asks Dunbar if he's planning on testifying at the Bowenkamp trial where he's being charged with attempted murder, "Are you going to get on the witness stand and tell the jury that I'm constantly stalking Bo?" Dave says, "Yeah, it's my job."
Yeah.
To which Ken Rex says, quote, "Well, I believe in killing any son of a bitch who tries to put me in the pen for the rest of my life," end quote.
Wow.
Dave Dunbar turned in his resignation the very next day.
Yeah.
And Trooper Richard Stratton, well, he was getting harassed and stalked by Ken Rex, too. So this type of thing went on forever, because Nickel Slick McFadden kept filing motions that were delaying any type of court date. And while Ken Rex is out here harassing everybody, he's holding this whole town of Skidmore hostage.
Yeah.
Anybody who was planned to testify against Ken Rex, they were stalked, they were bullied, and they were threatened. Finally, on August 18th, 1980, the preliminary trial of Ken Rex McElroy begins, and what his attorney, Richard McFadden, lays out is that Ken Rex acted in self-defense against Bo Boenkamp.
A 70-year-old man.
Yeah. Ken Rex was looking at a first-degree assault charge with a deadly weapon, and that carried a minimum of 10 years in prison and possibly up to life. Mm. And Richard McFadden was pulling out all the stops, including delaying the trial until June of 1981, almost a full year.
Okay.
Now, during this full year, the DA in town resigns. He's like, stick a fork in me. I'm out. I'm done.
Yeah.
I'm out.
Yeah.
Enter David Baird. He's a very, very, very young,
okay,
very green prosecutor who is 3 years out of law school.
Okay, fresh face.
Fresh face. He's been the DA in Nottoway County for 1 month.
Okay.
And I've seen an interview with him, and in that interview, he said that at the time he was too inexperienced to be afraid of Ken Rex. It was almost like he's saying, I was too stupid.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Ken Rex has been charged with 37 felonies up to this point, and finally he's convicted of one. One. At trial on June 25th, 1981, Ken Rex is convicted of second-degree assault, and he is sentenced to 2 years, which was a punch in the gut to all the people he'd harassed and bullied and shot at.
Of course.
And had their livestock stolen and their gas stolen and their grain.
Yeah.
But get this. Ken Rex is released on a $40,000 bail pending his appeal. They don't keep him after he shot someone, even when he has a history of stalking the victims of his crimes.
Jeez.
Now, D.A. Baird lessened the charge from attempted to kill to knowingly caused serious physical injury because he wanted to at least get some kind of conviction.
Sure.
And the town of Skidmore and the county of Nottoway, they feel so betrayed by the system.
Right.
Seriously, what did this man have to do before somebody put him away for good?
Yeah.
When he's released on bond, here's what Ken Rex had to say, quote, the jury convicted me and they gave me 2 years, but I'll tell you what, I'll never go to jail. I'll appeal it and get off. I've been fighting the law since I was 13 and I'm damn near 50 years old. I've been arrested over 53 felonies and this is the first one I ever lost, end quote.
He's proud of it.
So proud.
Wow.
After his release on June 29th, just days after he's let out on bail, he strolled into the town's bar of the D&G Tavern. It was owned by a man named Del Clement, a known cowboy, like a gun-toting, rootin', tootin' cowboy kind of guy.
You look in the dictionary and there's this guy's picture
of Del.
Yeah.
Yeah. Del's family, the Clements, were just like the Boenkamps. They were pillars of the community. Now, Rex walks into this bar. He's holding a rifle with a bayonet attached.
What?
He sits in the corner of the bar and watches everybody. He proceeds to make graphic threats about what he's going to do to Bo Boenkamp. He was still the arrogant goon he'd always been. Yeah. He waved the gun around inside the bar saying that he was going to finish off Bo Boenkamp. Now, several people inside the bar witnessed this tirade, and they called the DA, who revoked Ken Rex's bail. Hmm. They arrest Ken Rex and then released him again, scheduling a hearing.
Okay.
And in this hearing, the witnesses who saw him at the bar are going to have to testify that they saw Ken Rex in the bar with a loaded weapon.
Right.
Then on July 9th, 1981, Richard McFadden gets the hearing delayed for 2 weeks to July 20th.
To give Rex enough time to go intimidate all of the witnesses.
Yep.
Yep.
And this was the last straw. This is when the rage among the locals of Skidmore reached the end of their rope. Close to 50 of them had come together to make a plan that were going to protect the witnesses who were in the bar that day and heard Ken Rex say that he was going to kill Bo Boenkamp. And these people are ready, willing, and able to testify against Ken Rex.
Okay.
But when the hearing is delayed, all of these people are afraid for their lives because now Ken Rex is going to be free to point a gun and shoot at whoever he feels like, not to mention he now knew who was planning to take the stand against him.
Sure.
And the people of the town feel like they've got two choices. They can lay down or they can fight.
Okay.
These people felt like if Ken Rex was allowed to remain a free man, he would come after those people who were going to testify against him.
Hmm.
There's been an emotional strain on this tiny little town, this little town where nobody locked their doors at night.
Of course.
Now they're all locking their doors all the time and nobody's sleeping.
Sure.
The town had lost their faith in the police and the court system. On July 10th, 1981, they call a town meeting at the American Legion building. If that's not small town, I don't know what is. It's apparently a hotly contested town meeting. There were rumors of all sorts of talk and money changing hands for the death of Ken Rex.
Oh, wow.
Who was at the meeting? Well, not the town minister. He was in Boulder, Colorado.
Right.
Not Bo or Lois Bowenkamp. Want to know who was there? Romaine Henry. And the Nottoway County Sheriff, Dan Estes.
Okay.
He's also there.
Okay.
The mayor of Skidmore. Yep, he's there too. These people at the town meeting are asking the Sheriff Estes what they can do to keep Ken Rex from harming Bo or anybody else for that matter.
Kind of reminds me of the town meeting in Blazing Saddles.
It's a little bit like that.
Ruff, ruff, ruff. Sorry.
Mr. Johnson makes a good point.
Oh, man.
It's not as much fun at this town meeting.
Yeah, I was going to say.
They're upset because the law is failing them and their DA is getting outmaneuvered by the city slicker, Richard McFadden. And they want to know legally what we can do to keep Ken Rex in check.
We don't want to break the law. We just want to bend it as far as we can.
We just want to bend it. Yeah, till it almost breaks.
Yeah.
Quote, "We simply felt that the system had failed us. We all know what McElroy was like. And there he was again and again. It seemed like nobody could stop him."
Right.
End quote.
Yeah.
The official word from Sheriff Estes was that they could form a neighborhood watch.
Was that in air quotes?
You all can patrol the neighborhood.
Wink, yeah. Wink, wink.
Yeah. Now, while this meeting is taking place, someone comes running into the Legion Hall and says, "Hey, Ken Rex is over at the D&G Tavern with Trina. He's sitting at the bar and he's drinking."
Okay.
Now, officially, Sheriff Estes tells the whole lot of them, "Don't you go trying to start something."
That was also in air quotes.
Well, the report said he instructed the assembled group not to get into a direct confrontation with Ken Rex.
All right.
Which means, don't y'all go over there and try and start something.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But these people are concerned about the welfare of those who had signed statements concerning the bond revocation hearing.
Right.
And these people stood up for themselves thinking they were helping to keep Ken Rex in jail until his appeal. So what was Ken Rex planning on doing to them?
Right.
And after Sheriff Estes gives his warning, he hightails his ass out of town in his cruiser. He says, "See ya."
Yeah. I know nothing.
Yeah, he says to them, "Don't go over there and start anything." Yeah. "All right, I'm leaving town." The people of Skidmore decide they'd had enough. And about 45 of them go to the tavern. Now, there aren't any pitchforks and fire torches, but this is the kind of scene it is.
That's exactly what I was thinking.
The bar fills up with people like to the brim. According to Trina, everyone was getting free beers and celebrating something. Like, they're in there high-fiving and drinking. And Ken Rex and Trina aren't getting anything free.
Yeah.
They surrounded Ken Rex, shouting at him that they'd had enough and that his days were numbered. This according to Trina. Trina also said it was odd because there were never that many people inside the tavern at one time. Trina's drinking a soda, by the way, and Ken is drinking a beer.
Mm-hmm.
When he's finished, he buys a 6-pack of beer and some Rolaids. I thought that was funny. And he and Trina get up from the bar without saying a word. They push their way through the crowd to the exit. The group outside the tavern had grown.
Wow.
And they're jeering at them as they leave the bar. I also read that people filed out behind Ken Rex, single file. Wow. One by one, they file out.
This is getting exciting.
As soon as the two of them, As I'm drawing you in with my storytelling.
I know.
As soon as the two of them walk out the door, Trina and Ken Rex climb into his pickup truck. According to Trina, people were just walking around the truck, staring and laughing. That's when Ken Rex starts the car and pauses to light a cigarette. Now, with the car still in park, Ken Rex is shot, first from the back and then again from the front. He's actually shot at several times.
Okay.
He is hit by three bullets. The first, a fatal shot into his head from the front, and then two shots through the back window of the pickup into his neck. When the gunfire starts, Trina jumps out of the cab and hits the ground. Jack Clement picks her up and pulls her away from the truck. When the shooting stops, everybody standing around the truck picks up the spent shell casings from the ground, and they walk away. Two shell casings are inadvertently left behind. No ambulance is called. Ken Rex McElroy is dead. His foot is lodged on the accelerator while the truck is in park. So it's just revving the whole time.
Yeah.
Nobody touched him. Nobody called the police. They simply turned and walked away. The engine is burning up and now has caught fire. It blows up. The engine blows with a bang. And then the streets are empty and it's just quiet. When someone does notify the authorities, first on the scene is a young police officer named Randy Strong. He knows what's just happened is huge. When Sheriff Randy Estes shows up, he is visibly upset. He's walked onto a crime scene with no witnesses, no rubberneckers, nobody trying to help in any way, and Ken Rex is dead.
Yeah.
Trina was taken to the local bank where she could be looked over and then handed over to the police. But the police are just standing on this empty street, scratching their heads. Nobody's outside.
Right.
Nobody's helping. And when the police and the sheriff begin to question people, basically everybody in town they question, nobody saw a thing.
Yeah, we don't know what happened.
I didn't see anything.
Yeah.
Ken Rex was hit once by a centerfire rifle and twice by a .22 caliber rimfire rifle. Mm. There was a shooter in front of the truck and one parked in behind him.
Wow.
Police start doing their job. Who had motive? Well, basically the entire town.
Yeah, exactly.
He bullied and threatened everybody at one point or another. It was a media sensation. A man was shot in broad daylight and no one in the entire town says a thing. Reporters came from around the world to crack the case. Every single one of them thought, I'm rolling into this little podunk town with their Barney Fife police force. He's got one bullet in his gun.
Who don't know anything about small town behavior.
Yeah. And, you know, I'm coming in with my big city journalism degree and my camera crew. Yeah. I'll get them to talk. Nope. Not a word, not a peep out of anybody.
Guess what, pal?
Yeah, they were sticking together like glue.
Yeah.
But then, 1 week later, on July 18th, 1981, Trina is ready to talk. And she's got Nickel Slick McFadden by her side. She speaks to the press, telling them when the shooting started, a man told her to stay in the car because they wanted to shoot her too. Not that she was pulled from the car, from the truck.
Okay.
Trina tells the reporters that she knows who killed her husband. She tells the press that she's told police who it is, and they haven't done anything. She tells them all that she's leaving Skidmore with her children, that they're not safe there, and they're leaving for an undisclosed location.
Okay.
Trina tells the press she has no idea why anyone in town would want to do this to her husband.
Because he was such a great guy.
And Alice Woods comes forward, Ken Rex's third wife, to say, quote, Ken was totally different from the way they are saying he was now. Oh, he was wild, but he wasn't guilty of all those things they say. He was honest and generous. I never knew him to steal anything ever, end quote.
Okay.
Yeah. That's like, what is that, Stockholm Syndrome?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Trina said in this same interview, quote, the police officers were always hassling him. They'd accuse him of anything, even things I know he didn't do because I was with him. They just wanted him because he wouldn't kneel down to them, end quote.
Jeez. Okay.
So who is the one person Trina says killed her loving and honest husband, Ken Rex? Well, It's Del Clement, the real cowboy who was an owner of the D&G Tavern.
Okay.
To which Del said, oh, hell no. No, it wasn't me.
Yeah.
And no charges were brought. And what I haven't told you is that there was some bad blood between the Clement family and Ken Rex. And here's the beef. Ken Rex was bad for business. He would come into the bar and just sit and drink all the time for days at a time. And if Ken Rex was in there, nobody else wanted to come into the bar.
Yeah.
And according to McLean's In Broad Daylight, Del Clement was a, quote, short man with a chip on his shoulder and a hot temper, wore a cowboy hat, and drank heavily. It wasn't hard to imagine him jerking the gun from his pickup in a burst of anger and opening up on the large black head on the other side of the rear window of the pickup, end quote.
Well, there you go.
He's also said that in the many years he spent researching this case, he never heard another name seriously mentioned as the shooter. It was only Del. But he was shot from the front and the back, and Del can't be in two places at the same time.
Yeah.
But who can corroborate this? What about the 45 people that witnessed the murder?
Right.
Did they see Del?
Yeah.
No.
No.
Only Trina saw that.
Right.
Trina, who he used, beat, and abused. When no one talks, the major case squad asks for a coroner's inquest, which is just like a mini grand jury of six people to hear the testimony. More than anything, it was a way for independent individuals to talk without worrying about being a snitch because these records are sealed just like a grand jury.
Hmm.
But they believed Trina. And this was a jury made up of people from Nottoway County. And at one point, the major case squad did have another witness who was ready to testify. But the next day, he had himself an attorney. He recanted the entire story. And why? Well, while he'd been talking to the authorities and given his testimony, his fence had been cut and all of his cattle were taken. No more talking. He was done.
Wow.
So the coroner's inquest comes up empty-handed. Nobody believed Trina and no charges were filed. And DA David Baird knows if the evidence can't sway six people of a coroner's inquest, how would he ever sway a 12-member jury?
Right.
So Baird uses a grand jury. On January 10th, 1982, 6 months after Ken Rex is gunned down, the grand jury meets, but D.A. Baird is having trouble because no one will talk, and the grand jury ends with zero indictments. They obviously didn't believe Trina.
Right.
And since grand juries are totally secret, the press still has nothing to report other than there were no witnesses to the crime, and therefore, no case.
Yeah.
So Trina and McFadden then call the FBI, claiming that the local law enforcement is working with the people of Skidmore to cover up the murder of Ken Rex. And 10 months later, the FBI shows up in little old Skidmore, Missouri. Now, remember, everybody from Morley Safer from 60 Minutes to the BBC in London have tried to interview these people in
right.
Skidmore, and
right.
they've never gotten anywhere.
Okay.
Up steps Robert Ulrich, chief federal prosecutor of Western Missouri. Between him and all the FBI agents dressed not in suits, but in jeans and flannel.
Trying to fit in.
Trying to fit in. The people of Skidmore think they're all a joke.
Yeah.
The federal prosecutor, Robert Ulrich, subpoenas all the people in the town. Anyone who was in town during the murder. And these people are obligated to respond by showing up, but not a one of them cracked. Nobody said a thing other than they didn't see anything.
Right.
So the feds start looking at Sheriff Estes. Was he guilty of conspiracy? Well, a little information about Sheriff Estes. He and his twin brother, Lanny, were both born and raised in Skidmore. And there were people who've in later years come out and said that Sheriff Estes was just as bad as Ken Rex. They were both bullies.
Wow.
The sheriff has freely admitted that he was at the meeting at the American Legion that day. He said he went back to his car and headed to Maryville and turned around and came back as soon as dispatch called to say that Ken Rex was dead. There are others who said that he was waiting right outside of the town. Like he left that meeting and drove outside of the town and he was just waiting there for it to happen.
Gotcha.
There was a woman who lived in Skidmore at the time who said she saw Danny Estes on top of a roof. That's the sheriff, and that he took the first shot. This time, there was a federal grand jury From the medical examiner's report, they know that Kenrex was shot three times, but they only had the shell casings for two of the bullets. Mm-hmm. The FBI subpoenas every single citizen in Skidmore, and some people would be on the verge of cracking, and then they'd say, I'd like to think about these questions you're asking me. They'd go home, they'd come back the next day and say, nope, I didn't see anything. Now, all these people appear before a grand jury in Kansas City. They're asked, what did you see to your right? What did you see straight ahead? What did you see when you looked left? And they all said, I never looked to the left, except three people who looked to the left and saw the shooter. Now, remember, you can be charged with perjury if you lied to the grand jury. You can be prosecuted, unless you're in Congress.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
When they ask all these people how many eyewitnesses, I don't know. How many people were on the street that day? I have no idea.
I don't know.
The FBI thought it would be a cakewalk, but the evidence indicated that no federal crime occurred.
Okay.
And on September 20th, 1982, it's all over. They didn't charge anybody. Hmm. The sheriff is off the hook. The whole case is kicked back to the local level. Now, the three people who say they know who shot Kenrex, these names are turned over to the county of Nottoway and the DA, Baird. He gets these names of these three people. But he says he can't take the case to court just to see what might happen. He can only take cases that are prosecutable.
Okay.
And he says they don't have significant evidence to go to trial. Hmm. So now, was he afraid he'd be lynched?
Yeah.
Because the whole damn town just wanted it to be over.
Right.
And it did go away for a while.
Right.
But 3 years later, Trina filed a civil suit. She's asking for $11 million. And she's suing Del Clements, Sheriff Danny Estes, and Steve Peters, the mayor at the time, as well as the entire city of Skidmore. Hmm. Then Trina says she's worried she'll be murdered, so she asks for it to be dismissed because, according to her, she's protecting her children. She settles out of court for $17,000. That's a far cry from $11
million. Yeah.
Then she moves away. And that was the last Skidmore ever saw of Trina or any other McElroy. Hmm. Trina remarried and moved to the Ozarks, living in secret. She would die of cancer on her birthday in 2012. She was 55. Hmm. That's what became of Trina. But what about the town of Skidmore?
Yeah.
The town shriveled up. People stopped socializing. They all kept to themselves. Loads of people packed up and left town.
Yeah.
The bank closed. The grocery closed. The town dries up. And even after Kenrex McElroy was no longer there to harass the good people of Skidmore, there were lots of tragedies in town. They were plagued with murders and suicides and deaths.
Really?
There have been at least 9 horrible deaths since Kenrex died. Most of the people who knew anything from that day are all gone. The sheriff, the Bowen Camps, Del Clement actually drank himself to death. He died in 2009, still denying he had any role in killing Kenrex. The town has meth labs and meth users. Mm-hmm. Wives have been beaten to death, murder, suicides, drownings, missing persons, even the murder of a young mother whose unborn child was taken from her pregnant belly while she was still alive.
Wow.
This is what Skidmore turned into.
Yeah.
Kenrex McElroy was buried at Memorial Park Cemetery in St. Joseph, Missouri. He was 47 years old. On his tombstone are the words, quote, brave, fearless, and compassionate.
Whatever.
I think they got the fearless part right.
Yeah, yeah.
Years later, Cheryl Houston, the daughter of Bo Bowenkamp, who witnessed the shooting from her parents' store, said, quote, once the shroud of silence fell, there was going to be no one talking. They could have pushed and dug and pushed and dug and gotten nothing. We were so bitter and so angry at the law for letting us down that it came to somebody taking matters into their own hands. No one has any idea what a nightmare we all lived, end quote.
Wow.
Most believe the murder of Kenrex McElroy wasn't something that was planned that day. More like preparation meeting opportunity.
Right.
Like it was a knee-jerk reaction that ended with a dead man in this small town, and then that small town ended up caving in on itself
right.
while they were keeping quiet.
Yeah.
But that is the story, the mystery of the murder of Kenrex McElroy, and it is an unsolved murder still. That's all I have to say about that. She is only one, but what if one is all that's needed? Hospice nurse Indy Luce has fallen in love. After caring for billionaire Louis Thornberry until his final breath, She's now engaged to marry the heir apparent of the global tech empire, David Thornberry. But as the divinely marked Indy packs up her old life to begin anew, a sacred promise comes back to haunt her with a vengeance. As an unrelenting spiritual battle unfolds in the shadows, the descendants of those like Indy find themselves persistently lured and ensnared as a relentless surge of evil becomes an unstoppable force. With malevolent entities following her every step, what Indy doesn't know about her family's sacred covenant could tip the scales of good and evil. The follow-up to the paranormal suspense novel Lead Me From Temptation and book 2 of the Divine Darkness series Deliver Me From Evil is now available March 29th, 2024, wherever you buy or download books, or go to chriscalvert.com. If evil prowls seeking someone to devour, can one woman seek and save that which is lost?
You know, I often wonder about, you know, people like that that are bullies and just mean, evil, criminal type people. Do they think that they're either A, never going to get caught, or B, that there's going to be any kind of retribution?
I mean, a lot of them don't care.
Yeah.
They're to the point where they don't care what they do or what the outcome is, or they don't care at the time until they're caught.
Right.
And then they go to jail. Then they care. Yeah. Then they, you know, then they hate themselves and they shouldn't be in jail for that long. And
I just think they think they're invincible.
Well, the thing is, if somebody had just stood up to Ken Rex from the beginning and put his ass in jail, then none of this would have happened.
Yeah.
He probably would have died in jail.
Right.
But at least the 12-year-old girls in town would be, you know, safe from him.
Yeah.
It's a crazy story. Crazy story.
Yeah. Well, let's go from crazy to crazy.
Okay.
With a little bless your heart.
Well, bless your heart.
All right, number one, I'm calling this, instead of soccer, how about sucker?
I get such a kick about how you name these.
Well, you know. Okay.
He's more than just a musician, folks.
Oh, I'm a funny guy. Paul,
just asking.
Yeah, exactly. Paul Robert Benson, and I want you to remember that name, Benson.
Benson.
Yes, yeah, stole some items from a store in Belfast, Ireland.
Oh, I love it when we go across the pond.
We're across the pond for all these. Unfortunately for the hapless thief, his crime was caught on CCTV, and so was the Benson 22 written on his back.
Oh my gosh, he's wearing his jersey.
He's wearing a jersey.
His athletic jersey.
Yeah, from one of the soccer teams.
Football.
You
better get that straight. Don't call it soccer.
That's true.
They call it football.
He fled the scene after realizing he had been spotted shoplifting by the store employees. But when police watched the CCTV footage, Benson's identity was staring them right in the face.
I mean, come on, man. That's not even a bless your heart. That's a come on, man.
I know. The crook was arrested and pleaded guilty to theft when he appeared in court.
Yeah, what was he going to say?
I know. District Judge Mr. Mervyn Bates highlighted Benson's stupidity, saying he might as well have had a neon sign identifying himself. He was given a 12-month probation order.
Oh, okay. So he didn't have to go to jail.
No.
He's well in it. He'd be still wearing his footballer jersey all over the place.
Yeah, probably on probation. Yeah. All right, number two. Listen, I knew Betty Crocker, and you're no Betty Crocker.
Rob says this to me all the time.
I do not. Two bungling drug dealers were arrested after they had the half-baked idea of buying 12 food blenders at once to speed up production at their $385,000 cocaine factory.
Like a food processor?
You got it.
Okay.
Suspicious supermarket staff tipped off police as neither Gavin Etchell or Thomas Davies, quote, look like cooks or bakers.
They don't look like Betty Crocker.
They don't. And officers found a well-equipped drug operation in a raid on Etchell's home. Prosecutor Roger Griffiths said four blocks of cocaine worth $385,000 were to be mixed in the $10 blenders with 5.8 kilograms of pain reliever, benzocaine, so the pair could increase their profits.
They're cutting their cocaine.
He said it was the purchase of the mixers by Davies in such quantities at the store that the suspicions of the staff were aroused and the police were informed.
They go out with 10 pieces of equipment. They're like, something's up there. Yeah. They're doing something.
Yeah, these guys don't look like they're doing after-hour cooking classes. Yeah. All right, number three. I think I can squeeze you in.
Okay.
A desperate clubber had to be rescued from an air vent after getting stuck trying to sneak into an Australian club.
Oh, my gosh.
Irishman Hugh McMahon, that is an Irish name right there, Hugh McMahon.
Hugh McMahon.
Has been forced to pay $1,800 in fines and damages after having to be freed from a roof near Sin City nightclub in Surfer's Paradise.
How about that?
Yeah. The 18-year-old was trying to get in.
It was 18.
Yeah. The 18-year-old. I know. Oh, the stupidity of the youth.
Yeah.
I remember those days. The 18-year-old was trying to get into the popular night spot after being kicked out of the club twice that night, the first time after he was spotted sleeping on a couch inside.
He just needed a place to lay his head.
I know. Give him a break, please.
Can you imagine he's laying there? It's like thump, 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 thump all around him. How do you sleep through that? I don't know.
I don't either. The teenager was on a 12-month working holiday when he broke into the roof space through a sliding door at the Promenade Apartments. So I'm assuming it was kind of adjacent to this place. And that's how we got up on the roof. That's my assumption. His plan was foiled, however, when he became stuck. He damaged the door's lock in his failed entry bid before becoming entangled in wires and stuck among pipes and internal struts in the cavity. Emergency crews, this is the best part. Emergency crews were called to the club at 1:30 a.m. with reports of a man that was heard screaming for help.
Oh, my gosh.
The delicate operation took him a long time, about 2 hours, while club goers crowded the streets to watch.
Okay.
The court charged him with trespassing, willful damage, and 2 counts of refusing to leave a licensed premises. Local TV station reported that Judge Ron Kilner failed to see the funny side of McMahon's antics, fining him with $900 and ordering him to pay a total of $1,700 in damages to the building owner and the Queensland Fire Service. So there you go.
And that's how Christmas got ruined. I always think of Gremlins when her dad came down the chimney, and then that's how Christmas got ruined.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, there's your stupid crimes of the week.
Well, if you have a Bless Your Heart or you know somebody's heart who needs blessing, all you got to do is go to hitchtohomicide.com where there's a pull-down menu. And while you're there, you can also suggest a case or tell us about your brush with true crime.
Oh, yeah.
That's all we have today. Keep the Kenrexes out of your life.
Wow.
That's my amazing husband out there.
And that's my beautiful bride in the booth.
Join us next time on Hitch to Homicide.
Bye, y'all.